My name is Jackie Lamport. Today is Tuesday, October 19th. Welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast. Today on the show.
This is something that I know that we put up a fight until the very bitter end or the very good end. So I'm hoping that this will also be transitioned into changing some of the laws that the RCMP go under.
We focus on the relationships between the different players involved in the Ferry Creek blockades following the denial, appeal, and temporary extension of the injunction from the Teal Jones Group. Today's Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by Paul Farkas, an investment advisor at RBC Dominion Securities. Are you looking for ways to improve your financial future and help promote a climate-conscious economy? Visit paulfarkas.ca to learn about responsible investing. Paul's mantra is do the right thing, and responsible investing helps bring it to life. Reach your financial goals and feel good about it. If you want to help support the Capital Daily Podcast, the best thing that you can do is to rate and review on the app that you're listening to right now. And also, you can check out the membership opportunity for all listeners and readers at capitaldaily.ca/member. A lot has happened at Ferry Creek since we last covered it. To put it briefly, the injunction from Teal Jones Group expired, an application to extend it was denied, and then that denial was appealed by the Teal Jones Group, and now the BC Court of Appeal has granted a temporary injunction pending the outcome of that appeal. And we can discuss that in a little bit more detail. The injunction expired simply due to the date until which it was originally approved for had passed. The Teal Jones Group was proactive about filing to extend the injunction, as protesters are still on the land, but in that court proceeding, Supreme Court Justice Douglas Thompson refused the extension, citing quite an interesting argument. Essentially, he said the actions of the RCMP were having a negative impact on the court's reputation. A few pages of the decision were dedicated to the controversial thin blue line patches some officers have chosen to wear. Justice Thompson also mentioned that the actions of many protesters did not need an injunction to allow for police action, and that there were grounds to arrest people based on the criminal code. Immediately following this decision, Capital Daily worked to get a hold of RCMP Sergeant Chris Manso. Sergeant Manso has spoken to us on the podcast several times about the RCMP's presence at Ferry Creek. Before we play the conversation I had following Judge Thompson's decision, here's a quick recap on Sergeant Manso's stance on the thin blue line patches in our previous conversation.
So in regards to the thin blue line patches, there was a recommendation put out late last year by, I believe it was the Corps Sergeant Major of the RCMP. It was not a directive. It was not a rule. It's not not something that the members had to follow. It was a recommendation. Those members that are wearing it that I've spoken to, again, the RCMP union that we now have, they have given direction saying that they will stand by members who wear that thin blue line patch. The commanding officer of the province at the time stated that no disciplinary action would come to any members who were wearing that thin blue line patch. Prior to events of last year, that thin blue line patch was worn by many members. It was to represent supporting each other for either injuries, whether they be physical or mental, received on the job. It's not intended for any type of nefarious reason. Unfortunately, it's been turned into something that it wasn't originally designed for. It's become a bit of a political topic and one that people really are trying to make a divisive one. However, I don't have anything else to say on it other than it's been those members that are seen wearing it. It's been brought forward to the commanders for their discretion.
Okay, but given that I know what you said that it's evolved into something that it wasn't originally intended to be. Yep. If that's the case, if it has evolved into something that is quite political and can be offensive in to some situations, in that situation where you are dealing with police and protesters, is it appropriate to be wearing something like that? Or do you think that could possibly incite anger from the protesters?
I would hope not. I mean, other than what I've said, I don't have anything else to say on the matter, other than it's been brought to the attention of the commanders on the scene, and it's been supported by the RCMP union, who said that any members who would face any disciplinary action for wearing it would be supported, and the commanding officer at the time stated that there would be no disciplinary action for members wearing it.
And now, here's what he had to say on behalf of the RCMP ruling.
The thin blue line patches, do you think that there's going to be some internal discussion about whether or not to continue allowing those?
I'm sure there'll probably be discussions on that. I mean, the commanders have made their decisions clear. The union itself has made their representation. There's actually a release I'm just in the middle of reading right now from the NPF, who just put out something on that very topic. So, I mean, there's really nothing for me to discuss on it, but...
Yeah. Because that was a union stance, right?
The union said that they would support members, and the commanders there said that anybody wearing it wouldn't face any discipline. Knowing why the members were wearing it, it wasn't they weren't for specific reasons, and the judge's decision on it, was the decision. So there could be future discussions on it, but that's I definitely wouldn't be privy to.
After this decision, Teal Jones Group filed an appeal. Just days following this, the BC Court of Appeal temporarily reinstated the injunction until the appeal process was finished. The Court of Appeal is scheduled to hear the application on November 15th. Now, protesters, loggers, and RCMP are waiting to see what happens next, while protests and arrests continue to be ongoing at the several blockades. With the back and forth and drama surrounding the decisions, we wanted to see how relationships between protesters, RCMP, and loggers have been impacted, especially after one particular incident which was shared widely via video online. The incident is an altercation between protesters and loggers on an excavator. The day following the original denial of the injunction extension, loggers, according to Vice News, were digging deep trenches to try and prevent activists from accessing logging sites. So, to prevent this, two activists are seen climbing on top of the excavator and sitting down, so that loggers would not be able to operate the machinery. Then, two loggers climb up and attempt to physically remove the activists. The attempt quickly turned violent, and more protesters became involved as loggers were forcefully dragging the protesters and trying to throw them off the vehicle. Sean Hall, a spokesperson for Teal Jones Group, told media the company does not condone the behavior of the loggers, but also claimed that the loggers have borne the brunt of outrageous and dangerous behavior. We tried to speak with Sean Hall further for this episode, but we were denied an interview. In another example, a protester who refers to himself as Solar says he witnessed loggers holding down protesters and conducting citizens' arrests while they waited for RCMP to come and arrest them.
You're not a cop. Why are you touching me?
I'm
not
touching you.
You're holding me by the back of my shirt.
Yeah. Hey, let me go. Can you come grab this one for me, or you got one? What's up? Okay.
Ow! Please
right,
stop.
Just stop moving. You're fine.
Get off of me. You're not an RCMP. You have no right to touch me.
I'm just holding here, so if you don't resist, we're totally fine.
Ow!
All right. Just stop moving.
No, you get your fucking body off of mine right now. Get off of me. Let go.
Look,
let go of me. Don't touch my property, and you just hit me in the face.
I did not.
You did.
You got a sticker right above your head. Just don't stand up too quick.
He described a blockader tactic where protesters were attempting to get close enough to the trees being felled so that loggers had to stop for safety reasons. This was an ongoing occurrence in an active cut block near Helicamp. Frustrated with the tactic, he says loggers took matters into their own hands.
Basically, what was going on in the cut block was they were dropping in two teams of three loggers each. And there would be one of them, one person in each team would have a saw. The other two would be sort of helping patrol the perimeter. And so they have, I forget what they're called, they have the spikes on the bottoms of their boots. And so they're really quite quick and agile in a slash pile. And Yeah, so the two on patrol were actively chasing down and, you know, kind of throwing to the ground and holding down, forest defenders until the cops would arrive. And this happened to multiple people. I think there was at least three people who were in the police van with me. I don't know about, you know, the days preceding or after that.
We wanted to get an on-the-ground sense of how things have been going, especially now that the injunction did receive a temporary extension. So co-producer Emily Vance was joined by Capital Daily reporter Zoe Ducklow and went down to Ferry Creek to find out. Emily's going to go over that experience and share some clips from her interviews on the ground in just a moment. First, we'll hear a quick word from our sponsor. Today's Capital Daily podcast is brought to you by the Bay Center Shopping Center. Now open late nights till 8 p.m. on Thursdays and Fridays with free parking after 5 p.m. on weekdays and 3-hour free parking on weekends in the Bay Center's underground parkade. For more information, visit thebaycenter.ca. Emily Vance, thank you for going all the way up to Ferry Creek again.
Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, love an excuse to drive out that way. It's a beautiful drive.
Definitely. You went up last week and you went to see what things are like on the ground right now. What kind of picture can you paint from that?
Yes, I did. I went up last Wednesday. So I went with Capital Daily or the West Shore reporter, Zoe Ducklow. We arrived at what's now called Roadside HQ just after about 9 a.m. that day. There were a number of cars parked along the road, and there is a tent where protesters are intaking new people, new arrivals. We walked up Granite Main Road, which is the main logging road access to the watershed, to where the old headquarters used to be. And now, instead of the headquarters, there is a massive jumble of logs blocking the road. There were people in hard blocks, and one man was on a tripod the entire time we were there, probably about 25 to 30 feet off the ground.
So a lot different. Okay. I know that you spoke to a number of people about what things have been like since the injunction expired and then was reinstated again temporarily. What did you learn about how things have changed?
Well, it's obviously a fluid situation, but as for my experience last week, the difference was obvious right off the bat. We were there for about 5 hours, and I did not see any RCMP presence. Although they have been maintaining a presence in the area, which we'll get to later, I just want to flag that it is Monday, October 18th in the afternoon, and RCMP have resumed enforcement at the watershed. I'm reading an early report by Czech News, which many protesters speculated would be happening. And so, you know, last week it was a bit of a calm between the storms, if you will. So protesters were getting ready for enforcement to start back up again. There were hard blocks. There were people. There was somebody in a tripod, as I mentioned. And so, yeah, as I understand, active logging is taking place in areas around the Ferry Creek watershed. So not in the watershed itself, which is protected by a temporary 2-year deferral from the province, along with the Central Wall Brand. But in the areas around the watershed, the areas the protesters are attempting to defend. I understand that there is active logging there. For those who are following the situation closely, it is Heli Camp, the former Heli Camp, and Ridge Camp that are the sites of active logging.
All right. Interesting that they're back. Great timing. But given that the actions of the RCMP were the deciding factor in Justice Thompson's decision not to extend the injunction, we do want to know more about that. So what did you find out about it?
I spoke with 6 protesters on record who were on site that day last week about how things have changed after the injunction. They all confirmed, and RCMP have as well, that there has been an RCMP presence in the area. But several people said that it's been different since Justice Thompson's ruling. Here is a woman we met right away when we got to Roadside. Her camp name is Echo, and she has been on the front lines since June.
During the raids, something that I noticed was the farther up the mountain you got, the farther away from civilization it was, the more intense, the more brutal, the more aggressive the RCMP enforcements became. It was almost as though the farther away they were from civilization, from internet, from media, from outside perspective, the more they were willing to showcase their aggression. And it became a lot more violent the farther away we were. Once the injunction ended for that 2-week period, police were still present. They were still coming in with loggers daily, but they were on their best behavior. Suddenly they were calm. Suddenly they're gentle. They're being nice to the best of their abilities. And I believe that's largely just because of Judge Thompson's very clear discretion that their behavior was unlawful.
According to media releases by the RCMP, they have arrested four people in the Ferry Creek watershed area since Justice Thompson declined to end the injunction. There were three people arrested on October 1st for mischief and obstruction, which was basically stopping logging industry vehicles from passing. Then one person was arrested on October 5th, then again on October 6th, the first time they were arrested for the same charges, mischief and obstruction of industry vehicles. The second time was for being in the area in breach of the conditions of their arrest. And that is totally lawful. RCMP do not need an injunction to arrest people for obstructing roads. That falls under the criminal code.
And that's something that Justice Thompson noted, was that there were going to be or could be arrests under the criminal code.
Yes.
In speaking with people, what did you learn about how the ongoing relationship between the RCMP and protesters has progressed?
Yeah, so, you know, if you've been following along on the show with us in our coverage of Ferry Creek, you know, you'll know that tensions have been escalating and use of force has been escalating between RCMP and protesters. So I did ask everyone about that. Everybody, you know, kind of corroborated that. Everyone I spoke with had been around for at least a few months before the original injunction expired. They all alleged increased tension and escalating use of force. One of the allegations we hear often from people on the front lines is that RCMP target people of color and Indigenous people in particular. This is what I heard about that from Raven. She's an Indigenous land defender. I'll let her introduce herself.
Which means, hi everyone, my name is Raven, and I come from the community of Kitigan-Zibi, which is in eastern Canada on the Quebec side.
Raven has been up there for 4 months. She's a close associate of Whale Tail Jones, one of the only Pachidat First Nation members to spend time at the blockades. Raven says that they have both experienced what they believe is targeted force at the hands of RCMP, and they've witnessed other BIPOC people experience the same.
And only with the BIPOC that I know of, they put on actual handcuffs, and you're only supposed to put on the zap lines. But even with those, they're super tight. With every one of us, when they did put on the zap lines too, they put them super, super tight to the point where they're like turning purple and like we now have nerve damage. Like mine, our second arrest, like Welltale still can't feel most of her fingers, and it's been like more than 2 weeks. And then mine is still kind of slowly coming back, but there's still a lot of nerve damage on them. The day of the pepper spray incident, a lot of our BIPOC friends were there, and a lot of the cops were like, that one. All BIPOC people, and they got absolutely violently arrested. But they like to go for a lot of the soft tissue, so like when they hold you with the zap lines, like with me myself, I'm all soft tissue damage on my right hand side, and that's the way that they carry you. So you have the zap lines on and they'll put your arms all the way up. There's some photos of it, some videos, but that will affect this part and it won't show on the actual, like an x-ray, yeah, that one, so it won't show. So that's a lot of us dealing with all these soft tissue damages on us, which is why one of the reasons why a good amount of our Indigenous and BIPOC friends aren't actually here at the moment, because we're all dealing with severe, like, soft tissue damage.
Raven is not the only person to say that. I heard that from everyone I spoke with, the targeting of BIPOC people or the perceived targeting of BIPOC people. It's not new, but it is a big part of the dynamic up at Ferry Creek. Just to be clear, we have reached out to the RCMP. We wanted to put these specific questions to Chris Manso, who is their senior media relations officer on this. Really hoping to speak to him at some point and put those questions directly to him. We know that many institutions in Canada struggle with systemic racism, and it would be really interesting to have this conversation. I'd love to hear what the RCMP have to say on this front.
Yes, Chris, if you're listening, give me a call. One of the other relationships that I don't think we had on our minds when we decided to go up there, but one that turned out to be that, or one that we very quickly learned we were kind of naive not to, is the relationship between the courts and the land defenders. Tell me what you learned.
Yeah. So several of the people I spoke with were completely unsurprised that the injunction was reinstated. Raven told me that they felt a lot of mixed emotions when the injunction wasn't extended, but from her point of view as an Indigenous person, this is pretty typical of how she expects Canada to act.
I mean, I think I have a different perspective on it, mainly due to the fact that this is exactly what Canada has done and always does, right? They give you a double-edged sword. One being nice, one saying, hey, yes, we actually agree with you. We're going to stop this. And then the other one's like, nope, full force, go back in. But it's also how history always repeats itself. It goes and goes and goes. So it was kind of, to be fair, like I was pretty angry about it and a lot of mixed emotions because we've only had 2 weeks off and we're literally peacefully protesting. The only reason why they said that they would restart the injunction is if we started building and if we started making trenches. And we never did any of that. We were allowing the public to go through. If it wasn't for Teal Jones's gate, there would have been a lot more folks coming through, right? So for them to have restarted that, I think there's something more underlying about that, right? As I've mentioned, I believe that, you know, that company has paid off that judge. Mainly because why would you start it up if nobody's doing anything wrong? And the only people that come out here to utter death threats, to make trenches, to stop the public access, is those employees. So right now it's kind of like, you know, it's always been about money, and I'm going to keep going back to it because it's always been about money for this country, for these people. It's always been about taking down sacred and indigenous sites. And until there's an actual apology with actual actions to back it up, then it's just all null. So I never believe anything that the court system has to say or that the government has to say because time and time again, they always go back on it. And they have a massive way of manipulation, and that's all they're good for. So I was angry, but now I'm kind of like, well, we're not going to make the same mistakes as before.
You know, this sort of distrust of the courts and the feeling that the courts don't have the best interests of the public in mind, it's very similar to the view that a protester with the camp name Bozo Sapien told me.
When you're reliant on that decision, now everyone's disappointed. Right? We're all disappointed. Oh, I can't believe this happened. Well, I can. I can believe it happened because I never had confidence in the system in the first place. It's not meant to serve. It's meant to do just what it did. So it's not surprising, you know, at all to me. It's disgusting. Police, they're supposed to protect and serve, but none of us here feel like they're protecting anything or serving anyone other than big corporate interests that who are getting money from pillaging and raping the earth like they've done for hundreds of years.
He's there to protect the old growth, but it's part of a much bigger movement of environmental activism and Indigenous sovereignty.
The old growth is like the first step. Yeah. It's like one of the small steps to change a whole piece of this problem pie, because there's a lot of problems in the world, and it's like one thing that we can do to start that engine, so to speak, of, you know, how do we go from where we are now to where we need to be? And where we need to be is, you know, in a place where there's a lot more respect and understanding and compassion and where people feel more heard. Because right now people feel stepped on and people feel like their voices don't matter.
So the bigger backdrop of this conflict for many people I've spoken with is that it's taking place in an era where we know just how fundamentally climate change is going to change our world. It's something we've covered before, that the Rainforest Flying Squad's lawyers were attempting to bring before the court, that so far Justice Verhoeven and Justice Thompson later echoed, said it's not before them. And that is the public interest when it comes to how important old growth forests are in the fight against climate change. You know, Justice Verhoeven said that matter is not before him. It's a matter of provincial policy to decide how to proceed on that front. What the courts decide on is about the rule of law. Basically, Teal Jones has a legal contract to log that area. And if they can't do that, then they'll use the force of the province via the RCMP to clear people out so they can. Like, that's the point of the injunction. But what you have on the ground at Ferry Creek is a group of people who have decided that those laws, that the progression of this industry as usual does not serve humanity or their vision for the future of humanity.
I find it very interesting that another judge can be brought in and say, you know what, that doesn't matter. We're going to reinstate this injunction because Teal Jones is losing money. That tells me that the law system prioritizes monetary benefits over the well-being of people as well as the planet. And, you know, it makes me wonder, what is lawful? So many things in the past have been done under the guise of being lawful and have not been just, have not been okay. And, you know, you still see it here today. Money over people. So really makes you question the system that we're in. Makes you not even question it, makes you realize the flaws that are in it and the societal structure that we are living in here.
Being out here is right. We are doing the right thing, the morally and ethically right thing by being out here, because it's challenging that system that says, oh, if you want to save the old growth, you're a criminal or whatever. It's like, no, we want to ensure the future for our children so that everyone has a fair go, you know, so that we all have the opportunity and ability to live, not just, you know, be super greedy and extinguish all the resources in like four generations.
And that's all really super interesting stuff that is going to be very interesting to follow along with, because I think it's progressing into something we've never seen before. It already kind of started small and got bigger, and this thing continues to get bigger.
Yeah, completely. And you know, now we're seeing the return of RCMP and the specialized industry group, RCMP group, the CIRG, up back in Wet'suwet'en territory and with the Coastal GasLink dispute. So just with the scope of this, I mean, I get the sense that it's about more than just Ferry Creek. You know, it's about the clash of the interests of industry here in this province and, you know, what people who are increasingly becoming scared for their future in an era of climate change. And it's really interesting to see not only the RCMP crossover, but the activist crossover, the independent media crossover, people that have spent a lot of time at Ferry Creek. I'm hearing more and more heading up to Wet'suwet'en territory. So these conflicts are very much linked to each other.
That's a fascinating progression for this the people heading over from Ferry Creek to Wet'suwet'en. And Wet'suwet'en, I think, to a lot of people is an old issue at this point, but it isn't. It hasn't resolved and people are still fighting it. And to see these two things merging together, I think there's going to be a really, really interesting future for both of them.
Mm-hmm. You were already seeing some crossover in the first episode we did, or one of the first episodes we did about Ferry Creek. We spoke with a photojournalist, Camilo Ruiz, who had spent a bunch of time up at Ferry Creek, or up at Wet'suwet'en's territory prior to the pandemic, documenting. So yeah, these are interconnected issues, and you know, it's not impossible to look around and look at other industry projects and just see sort of a momentum of resistance building. It's definitely going to be an issue for the province, in to say the least, in the coming years.
Zooming back in on Ferry Creek, what is your sense of how this will continue?
It is, of course, impossible to predict the future. A couple things. We are obviously heading into a very difficult time to live outside and create blockades on mountainsides, especially in the rainy season here on Southern Vancouver Island. And from what I understand, the momentum of new people coming up to the blockades has slowed somewhat from the spring, you know, back when we were seeing at times thousands of people heading up to show supports on weekends. From those people who are there on the ground right now, though, the determination is really strong. From the organizing and mobilizing and learning and unlearning that I witnessed at camp, many of the people who are up there now have no intention of leaving. I spoke with several people about this topic, but I'll leave you with what Raven has to say on that.
And one thing that I'm going to keep doing is being here, because my body is, if that's helping to stop, destroy another sacred place, another thing that will help the next seven generations, will help this planet to grow, will help the people of this area to have their sacred land still, then the only thing that's going to take me out fully is if they actually kill me. And I know that's a pretty harsh way, but it's also, they've already taken so much from my people, whether we're down in the east or whether we're down in the west. They've already raped us enough, murdered us enough. They raped the land, murdered the land. And they still continue to do all this crazy stuff to our people. And this is something that I know that, you know, we put up a fight and until the very bitter end or the very good end. So I'm hoping that this will also be transition into changing some of the laws that the RCMP go under. But yeah, other than that, nothing's really going to take me out other than if they have to drag my dead body away.
That is very powerful stuff. Emily, thank you so much for going and speaking to everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Just after Emily and I finished recording this, we got word of another major update to the story.
They're standing right on top of her, preventing her from breathing.
What the hell?
As we mentioned, RCMP have begun enforcing the injunction once again. Their first move was to raid the new HQ camp roadside. According to a journalist with Al Jazeera English, the police and a tactical unit cleared the camp. During the act of enforcement, Pachidat member Whaletail, who we mentioned earlier, was removed from the blockade and at some point became unconscious and was carried into the back of a police truck. Her state of health or why she was unconscious is still not known. However, journalist Brandy Morin reported that she would be processed at either Duncan or Lake Cowichan. We will continue to follow the story. And again, we also wanted to dedicate equal time in this episode to hearing from Teal Jones Group and the RCMP. However, we were unsuccessful in getting a hold of RCMP Sergeant Chris Manso, and the Teal Jones Group declined our request. We will continue to try to get a hold of them, and if we do, we will have some updates in the future. And if there's anybody who is in the logging industry or anybody who knows somebody that's in the logging industry that would like to have their say on this, please feel free to reach us. I'm Jackie at CapitalDaily.ca and Emily is EmilyV at CapitalDaily.ca. If you want to help support Capital Daily's local journalism and connect your business with our engaged and curious Greater Victoria audience of over 50,000, you can email our partnerships team at advertising@CapitalDaily.ca. Thanks so much for spending some of your time with us today. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a rating and a review, and also subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes going forward. We post new shows every Monday to Friday. My name is Jackie Lamport. This is the Capital Daily Podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow.